You're gonna say something about the LOX line and the gas generator?
Seems to me like it was the LOX line to the gas generator, but I won't say for sure. Ask Bob Pease that question. There was a slight difference in the kits that had to go to the S2 engines rather than the S4B. But as far as acceptance testing the engine, we acceptance tested them, and we didn't care where they were going. They all got the same. Mm-hmm.
Was there anything additional that had to be done in the program to man rate the engines, or was just this normal testing and quality program?
Qualification program, of course, would man rate the engine. Well, we had quite a man rating was kind of a new word for us. It came up, and I wouldn't say it added much to the qualification program. Qualification and man rating kind of became synonymous after a while. But as far as qualifying an engine, we'd had that in the program from the start, and we had experience in doing this in the past. We always had a pre-flight, what we call a PFRT engine, pre-flight rating, and then a qualification engine. And the manned flight aspect came in, and that and the qualification kind of became synonymous after. Offhand, that's about all I can remember. If you have some questions, that might generate some other thoughts. But
what about the gimbaling system? Rocketdyne at one time was experiencing with kind of a screw system. Do you remember that? Was that ever adopted?
They proposed a screw jack, yes.
But it was never adopted, really?
No.
Yeah. Another question, too, about the turbine machinery. The bearings were cooled by the
liquid that was
propellants going in. Was that new with the J2, or had that been done on other engines? Do you recall that?
Had been done on other engines.
Mm-hmm. So that wasn't necessarily a big breakthrough by Rocket then.
Oh, not a big breakthrough. We had used lubricant in the H1 engines and the Jupiter engines, and it had always been a problem because of the cold temperatures surrounding the bearings.
Mm-hmm.
Rocketdyne, I believe, had used this on their Rover axial flow pump, mm-hmm. was the experience they had. And there were problems associated with it. I don't want to tell you it was simple, but I don't think that was one of our major problems at all.
Why? Since Rocketdyne already had big Santa Susana Field Laboratory testing engines there, why was it deemed necessary to build test stands for the J2 out here, which occurred kind of late in the program, didn't it? 65 or something? What was the reason, your argument for having a...
What we built here wasn't a J2 engine test stand, it was an S4B. Battleship type testing.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So, it's an entirely different thing.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of problems did you run into when you got to the point of finally mating the engine to the stage?
Well, we got into all kinds of problems. Our first experience, of course, was at Sacramento with the S4B stage. Liquid temperatures of LOX and the hydrogen going into the pump. Gimbling is always a problem after you get to the stage. We run into these kind of problems. You develop the engine on a hard test stand, then you put it on a battleship stage test stand, which again is rather inflexible, and then you finally put it on a flight stage. And going through this sequence is worthwhile. You get rid of your major problems.
Mm-hmm.
When you finally get to the flight stage, about all that's left of problems will show up that you've tried to compensate for and prepare for is the structural interface between the engine and the lightweight flight stage. The other problems, of course, are with your getting your propellant out of the tanks into the engine.
Mm-hmm.
This normally has been worked out on the battleship stage. Insulation on the flight stage. You try and use the same on your battleship stage, but the wall thickness is usually greater. Mm-hmm. So in the case of cryogenic engines, especially J2, where both fuel and oxygen are liquid, you have to keep your stage walls thin and your insulation as thin as possible because of the weight involved. So that's a problem that usually gets worked out of the fine details of it once you get in the flight stage. And the structural interface, when you gimbal this thing over full 7 degrees square, you sometimes find some problems there. Mm-hmm. And we did find, one of our early engines went to Sacramento, and we found a gas generator problem. We just happened to find it there, and it showed up. I think we found a hot spot in the gas generator. We had to redesign the orifice a little bit, spraying the propellants into the gas generator. Now the S4B, or rather the S2, where you get in the cluster, your biggest problem there, in my estimation, is a thermal problem. You got a single engine all by itself, you get more natural cooling to it, I guess is the way I can say it. You've got five in a cluster, you've got the heat from one engine being transmitted to the heat in the other, and your thermal balance between the five engines is a problem that, again, is you attempt to work out on a computer long before you get there. Mm-hmm. But usually find some fine tuning has to be done after you put it in a cluster. In the case of the S2, I believe I mentioned before, our thermal people were quite concerned on assuring that you had liquid at the pump inlets. Excuse me.
Kind of commonality between the F1 and J2. Was Rocketdyne able to use the experience developed on the F1 at all?
Well,
or on the H1 programs, since they did that one. Well,
they certainly used their H1 and Jupiter and Thor engine experience. They had, as much knowledge and experience, or probably more so than any other engine development country. Their F1 experience was helpful on the liquid oxygen side of this thing, I guess, in the turbo machinery area. They had their experience in hydrogen. It was kind of limited to this rover pump, which was a ground test pump for a nuclear project. Because they had not had hydrogen, well, the F1 pumping kerosene, they did not have a lot of hydrogen experience that could be readily utilized in the injector area or in the cooling area, for instance. Other than the general type experience you pick up in doing a LOX kerosene engine, there was nothing specific from the F1, I don't think. The F1 and H1 development program gave Rocketdyne and us, I think, the areas that we should be concerned about and look into real deep, combustion instability being one of them. That, I guess it always will be a problem with liquid rocket engines. Fortunately, in the hydrogen engine, it's not as big a problem as the kerosene.
Could you say a few words about the M1 development program?
Very few. We had a part in its starting here in Huntsville. Came as a requirement for a vehicle called the Nova, I believe, which never evolved into anything concrete. We had management of that here for a rather short time, and it was transferred to Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Was that at the same time that the Centaur was transferred up there? They were kind of going through reorganization. Centaur program, which was the M1 transferred up there.
No, I think the M1 was transferred
sooner,
earlier than that. I'm pretty sure it was. And Rod Stewart can help me on that. He had the M1 engine here for the time we had it, I believe. It was around about 1 million pounds, I believe, or up to 1.5 million hydrogen. And of course, Airjet, to my knowledge, never got to an engine systems test there. They did some component testing, injector, turbo pumps, and the requirement kind of went away for the engine. That's about all I know about it. I had personally nothing to do with the M1. I know Rod did.
When you began work on the J2 design, were there things that you wanted to do that were impossible at the time because of the limits of the state of the art of metallurgy? Were there things that you decided you had to do and kind of had to push the state of the art of metallurgy to a point where you could really accomplish it?
No, one of our guidelines or ground rules in our requirement spec was stay away from for a requirement for exotic metals.
Mm-hmm.
I recall that specifically. And I don't recall having to develop any new state-of-the-art business from a metallurgical standpoint.
We're just about to run our time out. One of the things that we would like to get from people, if you remember them or willing to tell them about, any funny stories?
Any funny stories?
Yeah. Sometimes we get comments from people and say, gee, the NASA engineers just out there working with their nuts and bolts, don't they ever have any fun? Doesn't anything any humorous ever happen?
Oh, we had a lot of fun in the J2, I think. We had a lot of headaches and a lot of head knocking sessions internally and with Rocketdyne, but we managed to have some fun on it too.
Yeah.
I have. Being a little prejudiced, I guess, I think the J2 engine program was a damn good development program.
Yeah. I think Rocketdyne quoted you to that effect in one of their sequences. I remember reading it somewhere. Yeah.
Quoted me that.
Yeah, maybe they didn't quote you exactly damn good. I remember that after the qualification test, you did make that comment. It was a very good development. You know, excuse me, I interrupted you here. Go ahead.
Well, I don't have any specific funny stories connected with the J2 itself, but on a trip to Rocketdyne, that Dr. Von Braun made. He made about two a year, where he would tour most of our prime contractors. And, of course, he was always interested in what's new. You know, what are you doing that's really new? So they came out the first time they showed him some of their toroidal engine work, which is another name for air spike.
Mm-hmm.
They had this semi-circular thing cut in half, and they kind of ended up saying you can buy propulsion by the yard. And he turned to Willie Marotzik, Dr. Marotzik. He says, you know, once you remember that, Willie, from now we're going to order it by the yard instead of by the pound.
Yeah.
He was quite enthused about that program.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of fallen by the wayside now, the toroidal engine, in favor of the high-pressure belt. But, yeah, there's always time for some funny stories along with those 60-hour weeks and head-knocking sessions. And I imagine that we're in for some more of this shuttle engine that's just going under contract here.
Has this recent... I'm going to turn that off right here.
Okay.
Has this recent...